Hello, friends. Welcome to Lunchtime Conversations. I'm your host, Nanette Weiser. And once again, Radio St. Pete is honored to have the founder of Studio at 620 and the amazing artist and performer, Bob Devin Jones. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you, Nanette. Delighted to be with you.
I cannot wait to have you tell us about a delicious evening of Mad Panic, June 5th through the 7th, at the Studio at 620. Fill us in.
It's an evening of a one-act play by Kevin Wardlow called Battle Wounds, and then it's a series of narratives that take on or have to do with resiliency, Thanksgiving, and gratitude. In no particular order.
And this is an original creative narratives and plays from local artists, and it's presented by the Blacksmiths and directed by you, Bob. Tell us a little bit. I believe Marco Hammond told me that you performed this in upstate New York at one point.
Yeah, we have a nice place that my partner built 20 years ago. And we've been together 28 years. And I got this grant, basically recommended for it. In fact, I call it a mini MacArthur, and you could do whatever you want. And so I said, it was for almost $10,000. I just had to submit a CV and a resume. And so I decided to use a portion of the money, at least half of it, to take up five writers, fly them up to Syracuse, our place is right outside of Syracuse, and do a retreat where we would have breakfast together, then they would write for 5 to 6 hours, and then we'd share around the campfire.
Your very own bread loaf.
Yes. And so this, and the writing was amazing. I'd give them an etude for writing about the given circumstances in the moment, and then write about what they want to write about, which could be anything or anybody or any place and time. And they did, and then we'd share it. And once we took off to the Finger Lakes to Skinny Adler's for our lunch, and then we came home, took a break, and then worked for 5 hours. They did. I didn't work with them. They would work on their own, and then we'd share. And then we'd share with not an eye to how you can make it different, but what appealed to you. A couple of the writers, one in particular, Edward Leonard, he wanted a different kind of feedback. So I was okay with that. But I really think, and I always would stress, is when your turn is up, there's only one writer on the planet, and you have an opportunity to tell them what resonated with you, what occurred for you, but not to tell them how to make it better or even posit a new idea. Because most writers have a font of unused ideas, so it's fun. It's really fun and instructive to work with what you have.
What I'm so amazed about, Bob, and people in this community have said it over and over again, is how you shine a light on new talent, how you shine a light on people, even mid-talent. And this is just, you know, this collaborative living together to create art. It's just a very, you know, it's an old idea. They used to have salons, right,
yes,
in France. So, you know, I think this is fascinating. So share with us, let's start with Kevin Wardlaw. Tell us about Kevin and share with us what we need to know about him, who is the Act One.
Okay, he's the Act One, and his play is Battle Wounds, and he's written several plays. I chose that one because it mirrors, he's gone through some neurological challenges of the past year. But when I first met him several years ago, he was, you know, as fit-seeming as anybody. But he's gone, he's had a transformation, let's say. And I somehow wanted to do something that celebrated his tenacity with his writing. So I chose Battle Wounds, and Battle Wounds suggests that it's a wound that could get better. And I wanted something of resiliency because he is demonstrating that.
Wonderful. And then in Act Two, we have narratives. Let's start with Lance Felton. Share with us what you would like us to know about Lance.
Well, I directed him at a play in Stagecoach called The Black History They Don't Want You to Know. And it's a series of vignettes and poems and observation and characters that he's written. And I've chose one that's him. He's speaking in his own voice, but rather poetically, rhythmically, metaphorically. But sometimes the metaphor is the thing, you know, the map is not the territory except when it is. And then that's the travel that you have to transverse, the actual territory. And so he does that. Also, he's a phenomenal teacher in that I didn't have it sorted out at 30-something. You know, I'm a late bloomer. And so it's easy to shine a light because there's a lot of light in St. Petersburg. You know, the sun never sets. It always shines, whatever the phrase is, the sunshine city. And there's a lot of light here because there's a lot of artists here. And Lance Felton is one of them.
And, you know, honestly, this is the Arts Coast. St. Petersburg is a city of art and local music. So moving on to Alex Chostura. I hope I said that right, Bob. Tell us about Alex.
Well, I met him through his Dirty John performances at the studio at 620.
Oh, yes.
And he does marvelous singing. He's a singer. But what I didn't know, only I just had a spark of it, he's so literate and learned and has all this experiential living. Grew up in Jersey, lived in near Raleigh, has come to St. Petersburg. And so I'm really excited to collaborate with him. And I find myself, you know, class is in session. He's he's got a lot of journey, and I'm just delighted to witness it. So he's going to be sharing a piece about these subjects of transformation, gratitude, resiliency, and Thanksgiving. But in fact, we have our rehearsal at 1, and we're going to hear the piece this afternoon.
Now, I'm going to leave the best for last in this delicious evening, which is you. So we're going to talk now about Troy Brooks. Tell me about Troy and your journey with him, please.
Well, I've seen him a couple of times in plays at American Stage, most notably recently in I Walk the Line. He played a musician in telling the story of Johnny Cash. But I worked most closely with him on I did a production of Hamlet as my final production at the studio last June before I retired, and he was just marvelous. And he went to Gibbs. I've known of him, and so I just said, you need to be the fulcrum of this play. And he's, again, someone said it, Sharon Scott said it yesterday. She would like to play a game called 6 degrees of not Kevin Bacon, but 6 degrees of Bob, Jeff, and Jones, because we...
That's great, Bob.
Yeah, and we, because Dave Ellis and I, who founded the studio with me, we knew that there was a very fecund, nascent at that time, really, arts community. And when we say arts, we mean arts with a big A and a little A, and accent, a grub, and a year. We mean arts. And there is a lot to take a mirror and just reflect what's going on in all segments of the city. And so we honed in on that. It became first our motto, then our mission. The answer is always yes. And we have found so much learning in the yes, because every artist is different, but similar, but every artist that we're looking at any rate are human. Although I do have John Banbury, who played Hamlet. He's looking about and is very much pursuing in New York City the life of trees and how they communicate to one another.
Oh, that's fascinating. I just watched Wild Robin, which, of course, won all of the awards. And, you know, nature and art is really inextricably linked. But, you know, this is such a wonderful conversation. Folks, if you've just tuned into Lunchtime Conversations, the delightful Bob Devin Jones is talking about his newest project, or actually a project that he has done before, but is taking a new incarnation, A Delicious Evening of Mad Panic, June 5th through the 7th. At studio at 6:20. Let's return to talking with Bob about Q-Star, Ama, who provides music, I think, for this act two. Tell us about that.
Well, he's one of these, again, the antecedent to Q-Star also was very daring, is that he can sit in on a rehearsal, takes a temperature of the vibration in the room, and then he composes. So I like an evening that's fulsome. You know, there's movement, has dance, has music, sometimes all three, sometimes just two of them. But I like combining, and I also like improvisation. Because my background for a long period before August Wilson came on the scene, and I got opportunity to record a dozen times different of his different plays, is that music, to quote Shakespeare, because he's always saying something, music, if music be the food of love, play on, give me excess of it. So I love, that's the way I work, to music. Are you familiar with a record company called Windham Hill?
Oh, most certainly, but share with our listeners, is truly, I grew up with that in California.
Oh,
love it.
Yeah, they used to call it
Winter Consort.
Okay, then you're right on the page. So many people call it, even in California, yuppie hot tub music, but it's this sparse but fulsome twangling guitar, particular William Ackerman was one of my favorite artists of them. And but I compose or write plays with that in the background. So I like to incorporate that in when I'm performing, you know, making a performance. We had a violinist who accompanied every scene in Hamlet that we did last June. So he's a gift.
Love this. So, Bob, let's get to the most delicious part of A Mad Panic. You're also doing the narrative in addition to directing. Tell us, give us just a taste of what you'll be doing.
Well, I've decided, and it's a good education for me, two of the pieces are from my very first play, Uncle Ben's A Home-Cooked Negro Narrative. One is Aunt Canny, played by Sharon Scott, and the other is Horace, a boy who believes he could fly, and that's done by Alex Joshua. And I don't know about August Wilson, although I did meet him once, but when you hear your words given breath by an actor and decision and movement, you hear it for the first time. So I wrote this play almost 30 years ago, and I call it my travel play because I did it in Ireland, in New York, in Memphis, Tennessee, in Seattle. You know, I've done it on American stage. And to hear it, to hear Sharon Scott, who I've worked with for a number of years, maybe 20, I first worked with her at American stage on a play called From the Mississippi Delta. And I remember asking her in that moment, do you sing? And she gave me a look, I'm sure. And then she didn't say yes or no. She starts singing, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Oh. And then, of course, I was schooled. I was eldered. And I said, okay, tag, you're it. And we've done dozens of plays. I used to do a free and open to the public, a Black Nativity, Langston Hughes play, at the Palladium. And the first couple of years, Sharon had most of the songs and almost all of the narrative. We eventually broke it up, but she's my stalwart, so it's good to be working with her again. And then the part that Alex is doing, Horace, I remember how I did it. He's schooling me how also in another way it can be done and occur. And I love it because one of the actors yesterday said it's so relevant how this whole melange or gumbo, if you start with a good roux, you can put in all the ingredients you want, but that roux is the foundation, and we have a good foundation. So it's eclectic, but it's specific.
I love this. You know, people that you need to, Bob has so many things going on. We're going to talk about his upcoming art show in studio on the 19th. But I want you to run, not walk, because most everything he does sells out June 5th through the 7th, studio at 620. That is the studio at 620.org/events/mad-panic. Bob, let's move on. Just give them a taste now that we've had a delicious evening. Give us a taste of an upcoming art show that you've got or in July and where that is going to be.
That's going to be at the studio at 620. They still let me come in and do a few things. Erica has allowed me to come back to the studio. I was welcomed, of course. And Nate Alexander is a person I've known for over a decade. And had asked him many times to do a show at the studio before I retired. It didn't occur. So then I asked him again, and now is the time that's right. And so his name is Nate Alexander. And somebody was walking by our table at Craft and say, oh, Ornate. So it's going to be, the title is called Ornate for Nate Alexander. And he is a cross between Lamar Bearden when you look at his collages and Keith Haring when you look at his line drawings. And he has a ton of work. So the show is going to be all him with some vitrines, with books, napkins, tear sheets, with music. And he has allowed me to visit his mind and his studio and curate the show, which I hadn't done in a while because Marcus Webby at the studio was doing most of the curation in the last year. But, you know, I still have an eye and a desire. And, again, it's so easy because St. Petersburg, you heard it here first, although Nanette, you might agree with me, it's no competition. But in terms of art and artists, we are that of the Southeast, even including Atlanta or Charleston, which used to have the Piccolo Festival.
Right.
We have the Florida Orchestra. We have a half dozen world-class museums. We have two resident theaters, lots of small ones. I just watched the launch of a new resident theater company, Dead Canary, at the studio at 620. They opened with a play called Venus and Fur. And
our wonderful Stephen Riordan, who has a podcast, Big Beautiful Energy, with us. Correct. Yes, fabulous show.
Fabulous show. So I'm heartened by it. I'm also thrilled by it because it's a delicious nutrition. And I think art and culture is something that in most instances, and certainly in the best ones, happens every day. You don't have to go to a meeting, to a museum, to experience culture. It happens in the most ubiquitous ways all around in every facet of the city. So I'm delighted to be retired, still able to come out and do some work and find marvelous collaborators to do it with.
Well, we are delighted too, Bob. And what are the dates for this show at Studio at 620 with Nate Alexander and you?
It is in July, And so in the second week of July, so the art opening will be the Thursday, Friday, and 12th of the second Saturday. And then it goes into the next weekend, 17th, 18th, and 19th.
Wonderful. So I want to talk a little bit about Juneteenth, also known as Freedom Day, June 19th. It's a celebration that marks the end of slavery in the United States. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the importance of Juneteenth among African American artists and the importance of celebrating it from your point of view.
Well, I love Black History. We get a whole month to highlight it. It's the shortest month, so that's kind of a nice joke. But Juneteenth was when the information and, of course, the Emancipation Proclamation, I call it the promise paper, was essentially at the cessation of the Civil War, but it didn't get the information, no internet then, or World Wide Web or World Coast to Coast Web, until Juneteenth, and this was in Texas. So that's where it kind of had its birthplace, as I understand it. But an important piece of it is it's American history. It marks a painful but necessary to witness it chapter in our trying to form a more perfect union, or in order to form a more perfect union. So Juneteenth is a recognition of how long, not long, but it took several months for the information to get to this southwestern part of the country. So it's celebrated, and it's not a national holiday, is it? I don't think so, but should be.
Because, should be.
And they kept extensive records, and I'm not even one calling for reparations, but if you wanted to do the right thing, you could find like a pretty good case of Skip Gates, Henry Gates, on Finding Your Roots. He doesn't pursue this aspect of it, but I'm not for or against reparations. That's in the eye of the beholder and the beholder of the pastures, but it's not a bad idea. Just figure out a way to do it. And so Juneteenth is part of Black history, which is American history. And a lot of this country moved forward and coalesced as a world leader because of Black folks and the difficulties they face, but they got over. Any Black person you see walking around in America, that is African American, and has grown up and born in the U.S., can trace their lineage back to the Middle Passage. And obviously, because they're here, they're descendants of those who decided or who made it through, and in some instances inscribed, but made a contribution. So I think Juneteenth is very important. And as I look back, I've written a lot of plays, many of them since I've lived here in the last 28 years. And most of them have some aspect of them, the progress and the journey and the witness of being an African American. They're not necessarily Black plays, but that polemic is part of the lens.
And, when you talk about Folsom, the mix of music, art, and dancing, I love the fact that the Deuces is going to be celebrating on June 14th from 4 to 10 at the Corner Park. There'll be a breakdancing, incredible exhibition, art, music, live performance that honors, again, your favorite word, the resilience of the Black community, not only in St. Pete, but in America. So, honestly, I can't wait to see the performance at Studio at 6:20. It kind of sets the tone, I think, Bob, for moving to Juneteenth and then a summer of art and culture, folks. So, Bob, to wind up our show, just tell us a little bit. I know you got a couple things coming up in the fall as well.
Yes, I'm doing a play about Amanda Lear that Margot Hammond has written. It's a fabulous play. We have a fabulous cast, and if we can keep them together, we'll be doing it at the Dolly and then two performances at the studio. But that's just an example. Like last night, I was at the Dolly to see this play on Keith Haring. Brilliant. Chad Jacobs, directed by Anthony Gervais. And as I said, art,
well,
daily nutrition. So everybody gets fed.
I understand that, if possible, if they're not working on some series or something else, Jenny Bondurant and Mary Rachel Quinn are part of the ensemble.
Yes.
It's wonderful. Bob Devin Jones, Radio St. Pete, and personally, myself, thank you so much for joining us and sharing the news about your wonderful play that is coming up. We cannot wait to see the play at Studio at 620, June 5th through 7th, A Delicious Evening of Mad Panic, Narratives of Resilience, Gratitude, and Thanksgiving. And giving thanks for you, Bob, once again.
And thanks to you. And I think it's a great radio show that you are hosting, and thank you for inviting me to be on.
Folks, until we have Bob in studio again, I'm your host, Annette Weiser, and this is Lunchtime Conversations.